Mind and Body Reset, Modern Wellness Decoded. Science-backed wellness made simple.
When was the last time you were standing on a crowded city street, surrounded by the noise of traffic, the rush of people, the glare of screens, and just felt completely overwhelmed?
I think the better question is, when was the last time I didn't feel that way? For me, it's this low-grade hum of anxiety that just builds and builds. It's the cost of living in a place with so much energy, I guess.
Exactly. But then you turn a corner and you step into a park, even a small one. The sound changes, the light filters through the leaves. You take a deep breath, and something inside you just shifts. It settles. That feeling for me is profound. I've chased that feeling my whole life, ever since I was a kid finding solace in a tiny, overlooked garden behind my apartment building.
It's funny you say that. I always thought of myself as a pure city person. You know, give me the concrete, the steel, the energy. I thought all this go-touch-grass stuff was a bit simplistic. But lately, I found my daily walk through that little greenway near my office has become non-negotiable. It's not just a walk anymore. It's like a system reset for my brain before I head home.
A system reset. That's the perfect way to put it. And that's precisely what we're diving into today. This isn't just a vague, nice-to-have feeling. There's a powerful, transformative science at work. When we connect with nature, even in the heart of our busiest cities,
we're talking about the real, measurable impact of urban greenery on our mental health. We're going to explore this concept of forest bathing and what that actually means when the nearest forest is miles away. Can a city park deliver the same benefits?
It's a fascinating question. And we're going to be looking at everything from the neuroscience of how seeing green affects our stress levels to the urban planners who are fundamentally redesigning our cities to be healthier, more resilient places. We'll even hear some incredible stories from people who have found healing in the most unexpected urban oases.
So, the question we're really asking today is, what is the most effective prescription for the stress of modern life? Isn't something you get from a doctor, but something you can find just by stepping outside your front door.
And that prescription metaphor is so powerful because, unlike a pill, this is something that works on a deeply primal level. Our brains are, for the most part, the same brains our ancestors had tens of thousands of years ago. We're hardwired to find safety and calm in natural environments.
So it's not just a cultural thing, this idea that nature is relaxing. You're saying it's baked into our DNA?
It's baked right in. There's a fascinating body of research using fMRI scans. You know, where they can see which parts of the brain are active in real time. And they found that when we view natural scenes, even just pictures of them, there's a decrease in activity in the amygdala.
The amygdala, that's the brain's alarm system, right? The fight or flight center?
Precisely. It's the part that's firing on all cylinders when you're stuck in traffic, or you hear a sudden loud noise. Seeing green, hearing birdsong, it literally tells that part of your brain, it's okay. You can stand down. You're safe.
Wow. So that feeling of my shoulders dropping when I step into the park, that's a real physiological event. It's not just me imagining it.
It's completely real. Your cortisol levels, the primary stress hormone, begin to drop within minutes. Your heart rate slows. It's a cascade of physical responses, and it's tied to this idea of soft fascination.
Okay. That's a new one for me. Soft fascination. What does that mean?
Think about what usually captures our attention in the city. A flashing billboard, a blaring siren, a notification on your phone. That's hard fascination. It grabs you, it demands your focus, and frankly, it's exhausting. It depletes our cognitive resources.
Yeah, I know that feeling. It's like my brain has a finite amount of battery for the day, and the city just drains it.
But nature offers the opposite. Think about watching clouds drift, or leaves rustling in the wind, or the way light plays on water. It engages your attention effortlessly. It doesn't demand anything from you. It allows your mind to wander, to reflect, to restore itself. That's soft fascination.
And that's the core of this forest bathing idea, isn't it? It's not about hiking 10 miles. It's about just being present and letting that soft fascination wash over you.
That's the essence of it. The Japanese term Shinrin-yoku doesn't mean a literal bath. It means bathing your senses in the atmosphere of the forest.
But I have to ask the big question for anyone listening who lives in a concrete jungle. Does it have to be a forest? Is a city park a lesser version? Does the single resilient tree growing through the pavement on my block even count?
That's the most hopeful part of all this research. The answer is a resounding yes. The benefits are, of course, greater in more immersive, biodiverse environments. But study after study shows that even small pockets of green have a measurable impact.
The contrast from the gray to the green.
From the hard, straight lines of architecture to the fractal patterns of a leaf. From the mechanical hum of an air conditioner to the organic sound of, well, of life. That single tree is an anchor. It's a reminder to your ancient brain that life and resources are here. It's a microdose of that restorative power.
A microdose. I love that. It makes it feel so much more accessible. You don't need to plan a huge trip. You just need to find your nearest microdose. And maybe we're surrounded by them, and we just don't notice.
And that's the tragedy and the opportunity, isn't it? That we are surrounded by these little pockets of resilience, of life, but our brains have been trained to filter them out. We develop a kind of urban tunnel vision. We're looking for the crosswalk signal, the subway entrance, the face of the person we're meeting. Everything else becomes background noise.
Okay, but I have to be honest. That sounds a little overwhelming. The idea that I have to actively fight my own brain just to notice a pot of geraniums on a windowsill while I'm trying not to get run over by a bike messenger. It feels like another task. Another thing to add to the mental load.
I hear that. I really do. It sounds like a chore. But what if we reframe it? It's not a chore. It's an act of defiance, a tiny 2-second rebellion against the tyranny of hard fascination. You're not adding a task. You're stealing back a moment that the city would otherwise take from you.
Stealing back a moment. I like that. But how? Practically speaking, I'm running late. I've got my headphones in. I'm thinking about a deadline. How do I even begin to break through that?
It can be incredibly simple. You don't have to meditate under a tree for an hour. Try this. The next time you're waiting to cross the street, instead of pulling out your phone, just look up. Past the first floor. Look at the sky between the buildings. Or look for the nearest weed pushing its way through a crack in the sidewalk. Just notice one single living thing that isn't a person.
Just one thing. That's it?
That's it. You don't have to analyze it. You don't have to photograph it. Just let your eyes rest on it for the 5 seconds you have. What you're doing is creating a pattern interrupt. You're momentarily switching from the focused, task-oriented part of your brain to the part that can engage in that soft fascination we talked about. You're opening a tiny window to let your nervous system breathe.
It's funny. You saying that reminds me of something from last week. I was on a conference call, pacing around my apartment, completely stressed out. And I looked out the window and saw a pigeon. But it wasn't just a regular pigeon. It was building a nest on the fire escape of the building opposite me, just meticulously picking up twigs. And for maybe 30 seconds, the conference call just vanished. It was just me and this ridiculously determined bird.
Yes. That's it exactly. That moment of connection, of observing another life form just doing its thing. That wasn't just a distraction. That was a neurological event. In that moment, your cortisol levels dipped. Your prefrontal cortex got a tiny break from problem solving. You were, in essence, forest bathing from your fifth floor window.
Wow. I never would have thought of it that way. I just thought it was a random, pleasant moment. But you're saying the noticing is the active ingredient. It's the key that unlocks the benefit.
The noticing is the mechanism. The tree can be there all day, but if your brain is filtering it out as irrelevant scenery, you get a fraction of the benefit. The conscious act of engagement, of seeing the texture of the bark, the way the light hits a leaf, the sheer stubbornness of that pigeon, that's what creates the profound physiological shift inside you.
So the power isn't just in the green space itself, but in our relationship to it, our willingness to see it, which I suppose is both more difficult and more empowering. It means we have some agency in this.
A tremendous amount of agency. It turns you from a passive victim of your environment into an active participant in your own well-being. But it also brings up a really critical and, frankly, difficult question.
What happens when you look for that one living thing and there truly isn't one? What about the neighborhoods where there aren't any trees to look up at? Where the only green is the weeds in a neglected fenced-off lot? The access to even these microdoses is not created equal, is it?
No, it's not. And that is the most important and heartbreaking part of this entire conversation. It moves this from a simple wellness topic into a fundamental issue of social justice and equity.
Because if the dose of nature is a prescription, then we're living in a world with a profound healthcare gap. Some neighborhoods have a pharmacy on every corner, and others are their pharmaceutical deserts.
That's a perfect analogy. And it's where the conversation has to go next. It's not just about our personal responsibility to notice the green. It's about our collective responsibility to demand it, to cultivate it, to fight for it where it's absent.
So it's bigger than just me and my walk through the greenway. It's about the fact that my walk is a privilege that isn't afforded to everyone.
It is. But the hopeful part, and I really do feel hopeful about this, is seeing how people are taking this into their own hands. It's the community gardens transforming vacant lots. It's the guerrilla gardeners planting sunflowers in sidewalk cracks. It's the neighborhood associations demanding more street trees from their city councils.
So, the agency we talked about, it's not just about noticing. It's about creating. It's about nurturing.
Exactly. It's about becoming an active steward of your environment, not just a passive consumer of it. And that, I think, is the ultimate expression of this connection.
Wow. We started this conversation talking about lowering our own stress, and we've ended up at civic responsibility and community building. It's all so much more interconnected than I realized.
It always is, isn't it? The health of the individual is inseparable from the health of the community, which is inseparable from the health of the environment it exists within. That single tree on a barren street isn't just good for the person who sees it. It's cleaning the air for everyone, cooling the pavement, providing a home for that determined pigeon.
So, my final thought, I guess, is that this has completely reframed my perspective. I went from thinking touching grass was a bit of a cliche to seeing it as, I don't know, a fundamental human right. And my personal goal now isn't just to find these moments, but to value them, to see them as essential infrastructure for my mind, and to wonder how I can help make sure that infrastructure is available to more people.
That's beautifully put. For me, it all comes back to that idea of paying attention. I think the ultimate takeaway is that our attention is our most valuable currency. The city is designed to steal it, to monetize it, to exhaust it. And choosing to spend even a few seconds of that currency on a living, growing thing, it's a quiet, powerful act of rebellion. It's a vote for a different way of being. And the more of us who make that choice, the more our cities will have to change to reflect it.
A quiet rebellion. I love that. Well, on that note, I think that's all the time we have. Thank you, as always, for the incredible insights.
And thank you. This was a wonderful conversation.
To everyone listening, our challenge to you this week is simple. Find your microdose. Notice one living thing. And maybe, just maybe, think about how you can plant one for someone else to find. Take care and be well.